Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to start by talking about the omega-3 fatty acids and maintaining good lung health, how vitamin C stops drug addiction with zero withdrawal symptoms, and volunteering for anything in later life can protect the brain against cognitive decline and dementia, how sauerkraut, could be the secret to curing social anxiety, and how low coenzyme Q10 levels are linked to neurodegeneration. We began with a study from Cornell University, and it's about the omega-3 fatty acids. And by the way, they're so important for our heart, our brain, and for our overall immune system. The omega-3 fatty acids, which are abundant in fish and fish oil supplements, that's how most people get them. But you also can get those omega-3 fatty acids from walnuts and avocados. So there are other sources. Flax seed, hemp seed, all good. But they maintain lung health. That's according to new evidence from a large, multifaceted study in healthy adults supported by the National Institutes of Health. The study provides the strongest evidence to date of the association and underscores the importance of including every morning, and I believe every evening, around 5 o'clock, take 1,500 milligrams of the omega-3 fatty acids. And that could make a big difference. And I'm glad that that is getting out there. There are thousands of studies, by the way, in the peer-reviewed journal on the omega-3 fatty acids. And this was no small study. It was 15,000 Americans from a study group that were analyzed. Good results. Something easy to do and non-toxic. Next up from the CDC, vitamin C stops drug addiction with zero withdrawal symptoms. Amazing findings related to vitamin C and natural cures for drug addiction show tremendous promise for overcoming all forms of addictions, including to hard drugs like heroin. Vitamin C deficiency seems to correlate with drug addiction. Yes. And administering vitamin C in high doses offers profound healing effects without the negative side effects associated with toxic conventional therapies. Now, heroin addiction is widely known for its difficulty in overcoming, as is methamphetamine and crack and cocaine. And major withdrawal symptoms are associated with attempting to quit this drug, including abdominal pain, nausea, sweating, anxiety, trembling, agitation, projectile vomiting, mood swings, muscle spasms, and craving. However, by using vitamin C, it can dramatically improve recovery time and enhance the detoxification process. With traditional treatments, it can take at least a week to detoxify from heroin, and the side effects and withdrawal symptoms can continue for weeks, even months, after that, even years after ceasing use of the drugs. By comparison, vitamin C treatment causes almost immediate reversal of the symptoms of drug addiction. And when you give it intravenous at higher dose, 25,000 milligrams, vitamin C relieves pain, reduces the desire for opiate use, and I've actually gone up to 85 grams or 85,000 milligrams intravenous per day, in segmented doses spaced throughout each day along with other nutrients, and completely reversed drug addiction into heroin. And it is believed that since vitamin C is analgesic, it mimics morphine and fits into the cell's opiate receptor sites. This causes a reduction in the body's desire for drugs. And it's one of the best things in the world you can do to detoxify your body is to take intravenous vitamin C. How do I know? Because I went down to Reidsville, North Carolina, where there was a physician who was known for using the highest dose of vitamin C any doctor had ever used in America, 50,000 milligrams. And I spent a day with him, and he was explaining what he did, how he did it, and the benefits to his patients. But he never published in the articles on this because he said, no one in medicine uses intravenous vitamin C, so they're not going to accept the article. So it's just, to them, it's just anecdotal. But to me, this Frederick Klenner, that was his name, was really helping people. So I went back and I first tried it on myself as someone who's never taken drugs or alcohol or medications and who's been healthy, athletic, strong my whole life and with a really good immune system. I thought, let me see if there's any effects on myself. So I began to have my medical staff give me vitamin C every day. And I build it up, starting at 25,000 milligrams and going to 35, 45, and hit 50. And I felt fine. And then we took blood chemistries to see what it was doing in my body. Well, it really enhanced my natural killer cell activity. It didn't increase the number of natural killer cells that target cancer, trap them, grab them, and dissolve them through a process called phagocytosis. Like a little Pac-Man, it goes and boom, grabs it, dissolves it, the cancer cells, so it doesn't form tumors. And that's why people taking vitamin C orally throughout the day, ideally 5 times a day, 3 hours apart, and then taking intravenous occasionally can really stimulate your anti-cancer benefits. And then I went higher and higher and higher until I got up to 200,000 milligrams and still no negative effects. I did it slowly and I did my blood workup every 5 days. That was not cheap. It still cost me about $2,000 for my full spectrum because I wanted to look at everything that could possibly benefit or go wrong. And that's what I did. But then here's what I also did. Starting back in 1974, working with one of the leading gay physicians in New York City, Dr. Stephen Chiesa, over a 10-year period, I worked with over 800 gay men, a few women, but very few, 99% were men, generally young men, and I helped them regain their health from all forms of problems, pneumocystis, green pneumonia, Kaposi sarcoma, thrush, digestive problems with massive diarrhea, etc. Overcame all of it. No one who stuck to the protocol didn't benefit, and vitamin C at high doses was a part of that. And changing the diet and living a healthier lifestyle and helping them also make sure that the lifestyle they were living, which was in these individuals, it was what it was called a fast-track lifestyle, where your average normal gay person, 98% or 97% as the average heterosexual person, did not use amyl nitrate or poppers and or uppers, and it allowed them to have multiple sexual partners in an evening, even though they had what was called a dry orgasm. But it had deadly side effects. It caused one of the leading symptoms of what we would later call AIDS. So I was treating AIDS-like symptoms before HIV virus was discovered in 1984. Anyhow, vitamin C was crucial to this, but also I was helping people with fibrocystic breast disease, uterine fibroids, diabetes. But at the same time, I was also head of a drug addiction over Trafalgar Hospital, which was associated with the Institute of Applied Biology, where I was a senior research fellow. And nothing was working. And the former director who left, he just gave up. And this was the place where you either went to Rikers Island, and you went to jail, or you went to this. And each week you had to attend 4 sessions in a group and then a separate session with a psychologist. We had a bunch of psychologists who came in and helped the people. But nothing was helping. And these were young people, average age about 17. And they were doing everything. I mean, everything. Their blood was a sewer. I took samples of their blood, and we looked at them, and whoa. I mean, hepatitis, repeat hepatitis B and hepatitis C, and herpes 6. They had cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr virus. They had everything. Their blood was a sewer. So kind of interesting where we want clean needles to be given to drug addicts to put dirty drugs into their body, and it's just asinine. Anyhow, I wanted to try something different. So I asked the people and their parents, would they be interested in trying a more natural, holistic approach by detoxification? None of this was being done, by the way, anywhere in America. And they said, okay. And it worked. Cleaning up their diet. There was a cafeteria there. I showed them how to make healthy juices and and we would have healthy big juices and smoothies with each of our groups. And by using vitamin C and B complex, especially B12 and B6 and niacin, it helped them overcome almost all their urges for their addictive substance, whatever it was. And after a year, the director of the institute came to me, and also the director of the hospital. They said, "You're getting results we've never had before, ever. It normally is maybe 6 to 8% stay clean, the rest return to the drug addiction. You're getting 94% keeping off the drug." I don't talk about this. This was a long period of my life because the two were cross street from each other. I had no problem going between one and the other to do my original scientific research. But it was all about vitamin C and B complex. So I'm just letting you know, if you know anyone who has an addiction, find a physician, and there are a lot of them, who know how to use vitamin C intravenous, because it can make all the difference in the world. Next up, from the University of California, Davis. And this is important, and you don't have to wait till later in life. Volunteering in life, if you get older, is associated with better cognitive function, specifically better executive function and episodic memory. Those are the findings of a new study from University of California, Davis Health, and presented at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference just recently in Amsterdam. So why do we have to wait till we're retired to volunteer and supporting educational or religious or health-related or other charitable organizations? Allowing older adults to be more physically active and increase social interaction, being around other adults instead of home, you know, and providing cognitive stimulation can protect the brain. And that is important. That's the takeaway message. Now, here's an idea. And again, it's just an idea. And we have people all over the world watching this program. You just go to Gary and all, or you go to prn.live, scroll down to archives, and scroll down to Gary Noll, and you'll see me as I am now. It was kind of funny because before we started filming today, I wanted to show the group in the studio in New York, Kyle and Dylan and the others, and Kathy and if she's in, Sharon. When I get out of the shower, my hair is up to here, and I have to put a little olive oil to get it down. And I just finished yesterday a whole hour on how to have healthy hair. Now, will it work for everyone? No. Am I promising you'll reverse your baldness? No. I am saying, however, that I've worked with thousands of people, and I've done two clinical studies with over 1,500 people per study, and it works. Statistically significant improvement. And by the way, in a 500-person menopausal study, and I wasn't even measuring hair in there. And if people's, the eyebrows came back, because when you go through menopause, you frequently lose the outer eyebrows. And then the hair came back thick and thinning. It got fuller and more lustreful, and in male and female pattern baldness. So in this hour, which is free, it's there for you. I go through everything that Orthodox has to offer to its benefit and detriment, and what alternative has to offer. So everything you're going to learn. And so you go to Gary and All YouTube, and you'll see the hair, how to regrow hair, or Odyssey, or Rumble, or it's also on PRN.live in the archives. All right? So in any case, here's an idea. I believe that we could help millions of people every day, young, middle-aged, old, with their crisis, if we involved a national program. But start it locally. Start with something you can control. Start over the internet in your hometown, of asking if you're at home, if you have extra time, if you have an expertise, what is it? And then you make a grid, you make a chart, spreadsheet. Oh, I've got 7 men who can talk about X, Y, and Z. I've got how to fix things. Yeah? Because men are very good at fixing things. Women too. But if you look at people who love to solve problems with mechanical things, it's the majority of those are men. And then think of the men who are retired, who may have been supervisors and can contribute what it is if you're working on a project, if you have a small business, you're having problems, who could give advice. How about small business owners who are retired or sold their business? They haven't lost any of the knowledge of how they succeeded. And how about all the school teachers who are retired How about the scientists who are retired, physicians who are retired? And what they would do is they would give you their background and specialization that they can answer questions in, and their credentials, and then how many hours a week they'd be willing to donate. So then you know, okay, when that person's got 5 hours a week, that person's got 15 hours a week, and then you have one number that you give, and that goes into a central place, and then you can do this in automation. You can direct them to those people based upon questions they have. If it's suicide, if it's emotional problems, if they've gone through loss and are grieving and can't get through their grieving, if they're losing a job, if they're living in the wrong place, every question in life has wise men and women who can answer them. But they're not asked to. They're no longer relevant. They've been relegated to go to Florida, go on to one of these golf courses where every day you hear the same music from the 1950s, and you go, "Hi, Glad. Hi, Bob. How you doing? Same as always, same as always. Not changing, not going to change anything. Joining anything? No, we're not joining anything. We're not doing anything. We put in our time. Now we're just waiting to die, but we're playing tennis and golf in the interim and having our grilled cheese sandwiches and our milk and cookies before we go to bed." Jesus, man. We have the wrong idea about retiring. Somehow it's a right. No. No. When you retire, if you don't do anything, you die very quickly. Put joy in your life. Put excitement. Put challenge back into your life. And meaningful discussion where you're actually helping people. That's wonderful. That's spiritual. But no one's done it. And that's something that needs to be done. I would do it. But I'm already doing a Veterans Village in Texas, giving a home for free and food and counseling to homeless vets. Taking care of homeless right now. So, and writing two new books, doing four new articles, essays, and doing two more documentaries. So I think that my schedule is filled for the moment. But there are people out there whose schedules are not filled. So put this together. Start small and see how it works then. Get the word out, all right? Just a suggestion. It helps the person needing help. Think of all the young people who wouldn't commit suicide if they had someone who could understand them and speak to them as a professional, as someone who's lived a good life, learned a lot, mastered a lot, and now might be that intervention that can make a difference. Just a suggestion. And it also helps the person with their cognitive function who's doing it. And that's the latest on health and healing, because I took so much time in these little extra sidebars. We're going to take a break because I've got a lot to share with you today. And if you find what we're doing important, pass it forward. Share it with other people. I take a lot of time and effort to try to find you meaningful, relevant, honest, objective, unbiased, non-political, non-ideological information every day. And I've done that since 1967. Still doing it. We'll be back in a moment, and I'll show you what we're going to play. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. And please feel free to call in at any time and share your points of view. Something brand new that's very important. This is from the British Medical Journal, Quality and Safety. And it's a study, brand new study. And it's entitled Burden of Serious Harms from Diagnostic Error in the United States. Has about 9 different authors on it. And then it's laid out and their methods. And they start to look at all the different major, but not all, major incidences of, for example, vascular events and infections from 21 million people sampled, hospital discharges over a 2-year period. Annual new cancers were taken from U.S.-based registers. Years were selected for coding consistency with prior literature. Disease-specific incidences for 15 major vascular events, infections, and cancers, the big three, were multiplied by literature-based rates to derive diagnostic errors and serious harms. But here's where it gets important. This is the conclusion. Listen carefully. Quote, an estimated 795,000 Americans become permanently disabled or die annually across care settings because dangerous diseases are misdiagnosed, Just 15 diseases account for over half of all serious harms, so the problem may be more trackable than previously imagined. All right. Now, the PhDs, all with a good background in academic research, to each take two different sections of medicine, cardiology, nephrology, psychiatry, gastroenterology, all of these different conditions, obstetric gynecology, all the major ones. And the only data you could use is their own published data. So it wasn't from outside sources that may be biased. The American College of Surgeons, etc. When we analyzed all the data, it comported with a Harvard study by the person, I believe his name was LePay, something like that. And he said over 900,000 Americans were injured or died every year, actually injured far more, but died, making it the number one cause of death in the United States and the number one cause of injury, way surpassing all other injuries. And so I thought, okay, we took that study of his, and then we did our own, and we came up with somewhere around 750,000 deaths per year, but we decided to go on the conservative side of that. I think we ended up with around somewhere around 585 to around 750 per year. They're saying now in the British Medical Journal, 795,000 Americans every year become permanently disabled or die because of iatrogenesis, medically induced, meaning you misdiagnose, you mistreat, wrong drugs, etc. Now, the AMA did finally come out about, I think it was around 6-7 years ago, with a study showing that iatrogenesis was the third leading cause. But when we diagnosed or dissected their study, they left out bed sore deaths, which are infections are tremendous. People die at that all the time. I think it was 88,000 one year. And malnutrition that you get from being in a hospital setting, and that was 50,000. So when you add those on, well, you're right up there at number two or number one in deaths. And theirs were conservative. And that's only in a hospital setting. What about all the people who are giving the wrong medications, the wrong treatment, go home and die at home? Well, they're not included. So if you include everyone who dies in a hospital or becomes permanently injured, or those versus those who die at home, you're going to have a big discrepancy. But if you died at home from something you were taking, for example, Vioxx, 60,000 Americans minimally died of a heart attack or stroke from using this drug. Most of them died at home. Those who might have had the heart attack or stroke and then been rushed to the hospital, how about following this study another 3 years and said how many survived a heart attack or stroke but died later from a secondary heart attack or stroke, which is very common? There was no study. So here is my concern. And mind you, it's not my concern. It's the British Medical Journal's quality and safety article that is concerned. But this is being read nowhere that I can see in the mainstream media. It's not being dealt with. It's like it didn't exist. Because if you had to say that more people are dying every year from medical mistakes than the disease itself, then how good is your curriculum in medical school, nursing school? How good is your background in pharmacology? How good is your efforts in diagnosing? So we failed. So, okay, you have that many people dying every year, and this is every year. This is not just 1 year. Now you have something else. An excessive amount of people around the world who got vaccinated are dying an extremely high number from different causes, they're saying, of unknown cause. Well, there is no such thing as dying from an unknown cause. An autopsy will tell you what you died from. But as long as you're not looking inside the microcirculatory system to see if you have blood clots due to nanoparticles and lipids that are self-organizing, that clog arteries, you're not going to find that. And how many athletes have you heard died in the full health in young teenagers, 20s, soccer players, you don't get any more shape than that, and dropping dead? Well, just in the last 2 years, over 1,000. And why do we have a 5,000 increase in miscarriages above normal? But we do. And there doesn't seem to be interest because Walensky and others at the CDC say, take your vaccines even if you're pregnant because it's safe. Do they have the studies confirming that? No, they do not. So let's just say that, let's go small. let's go very conservative. Let's say that 500,000 people die each year for the last, let's say, 20 years. Okay, that's only 10 million Americans dying or becoming permanently injured who didn't have to have that happen. Is that a problem? Doesn't seem to be a problem, because not a single thing is being done to address it. There's no examining the medical curriculum. There's no seeing the influence of big pharma. There's no discussion about natural non-toxic approaches that could be used preventatively to prevent a condition, nor administered in combination with some other therapy. It's winner take all, and the winner is big pharma and the hospital associations that are owned by consortiums of groups like hedge funds and equity partnerships. So your health is really not that important, nor the outcome. Because if it were, I think it would be a little bit important, maybe a little tiny bit important, that you actually lived. But 10 million people haven't, in just the range of where all of you have been alive. So that does not comport with caring for people. But that's our system. You can deny this, then be critical of the British Medical Journal that had multiple authors doing this, and they pass this around because first, do no harm. Well, it seems like what they're doing is a great deal of harm, but know that they're identified, so you can't really sue them and win because everything is stacked against you. Just want to share that. Your thoughts, because I know you haven't read that article. I know it hasn't been broadcast anywhere in the United States. So I'd like to have your input on it. But before we get there, and before we get to other issues we're going to address on today's program, I'm going to play a few clips and then have you call in and tell you whether you agree or disagree. And I don't select a clip because I agree upon it necessarily. I select a clip based upon stimulating, reasonable, and understanding that we don't know everything, and shouldn't we be conscious of what we should know so we don't stay in intentional ignorance and allow ourselves to be manipulated by special interest groups? Oh, and let me tell you one of the really most successful special interest groups, and that is the one group that is never held accountable. No one ever goes to jail unless they make the mistake in the deep state of showing us the crimes that the Biden administration, the Clinton administration, George Bush, George Bush Sr., Ronald Reagan, when they expose something that was done illegally and crimes against humanity, they go to jail for their courage to tell us the truth. Look at Julian Assange. And where's the liberal media, or the Democratic liberal media, which is an oxymoron? In fact, yesterday, Robert Kennedy Jr. was going to testify at a topic. And guess what the topic was? Censorship. And guess what Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who really was instrumental in making sure that Bernie Sanders didn't get the nomination, but Hillary Clinton did. That's the story Richard Gale will be telling us about. She wanted to censor him with a vote at the hearing before it started. Wow. And not a single member of the media criticized her for that. Yeah, we're good Democrats. Let's have a committee hearing on censorship, but now let's censor the people who are invited to testify. And Kennedy answered his detractors, who are an embarrassment. They're an embarrassment. But the deep state, the CIA, and the FBI, because it's part of the deep state, it does everything in secret, lies constantly, and protects one group over another. So there's not equal application of the law. Name me the last person that committed a crime within the CIA, the National Security Agency, Homeland Security, or any of the other intelligence agency who's been held accountable. Now name the people who exposed the crimes and were sent to jail, or like Edward Snowden, had to flee the country. And name me a president who had the courage to say, hey, you did the right thing. You told the truth. You exposed it. It embarrassed us because we were doing illegal things, immoral things. And so we're going to pardon you. Surely a Barack Obama, right? No. Hillary Clinton, no, she wanted him dead. And how about all the others? Biden? No. Drake? No. Chelsea Manning? No. No, I've got 56 whistleblowers who did something courageous and they were all punished for it. What does that tell you about our entire justice system? When I hear something to think about before we go to our clip, I haven't talked about Hunter Biden or his father or their complicity because I knew the net was bringing him in. Here's what we learned last night from John Solomon, that a very reliable and highly trusted and well-paid into the hundreds of thousands of dollars FBI informant provided information from a Burisma, that is the big oil firm, the giant firm in Ukraine, that Hunter Biden had a job where he had no qualifications whatsoever and was paid tens of thousands of dollars per month. And one of the top executives has text messages from Hunter Biden and also said that Hunter Biden is dumber than his dog and made threats that if he didn't get $5 million and another $5 million for his father, that there'd be consequences. Well, he got $5 million and $5 million. He got $17 million just from them. And that's just the beginning of this iceberg discovery. So we have a group of six IRS field auditing agents and two included senior criminal investigators who risked their careers to come forward to say we had more than enough information to indict him on serious criminal charges. But they chose, they wanted to, but the Attorney General's office didn't. And then everyone in line below the Attorney General said, no, we're not going forward. And so it stopped. They stopped an investigation and let the time lapse go out. So statute of limitations passed. So he got to pay no income tax on millions of dollars in income. He didn't sign as a foreign agent. And he was transporting prostitutes across state lines, which is a Mann Act violation. That's a criminal offense. But nothing was done. And he lied under an application to get a farm because he was an addict. So all these things, and no one's willing to acknowledge any of its legitimacy. All you see is the Democrats on the committee. When any of this is brought up by expert witnesses who are jeopardizing their career, Matt Taibbi, Schulenburg, and others, exposing the truth, they get hammered down. How did this happen? When did we get to a place where we support criminal activity and we punish those who tell the truth? I'd like your thoughts, please. 888-874-4888. But because this is all very common knowledge, oh, and by the way, also it was revealed that the FBI had confirmed the legitimacy and accuracy of the Hunter Biden laptop, and they kept that secret to after the election, because that would have swung the election. But, and then they say about election tampering, yeah, that's just one of the ways. So we're in a mess. We're in a crisis in America today. So let's hear how we got here. First, we're going to hear from Russell Brand being interviewed by Bill Maher. Short, all these are very short clips.
The pandemic created at least 40 new big pharma billionaires. Pharmaceutical corporations like Moderna and Pfizer made $1,000 of profit every second from the COVID-19 vaccine. More than two-thirds of Congress received campaign funding from pharmaceutical companies in the 2020 election. Pfizer chairman Albert Bourla told Time magazine in July 2020 that his company was developing a COVID vaccine for the good of humanity, not for money. And of course, Pfizer made $100 billion in profit in 2022. Right. You, the American public, funded the development of that. When it came to the profits, they took the profits. When it came to the funding, you paid for the funding. All I'm querying is this.
Yes.
Is if you have an economic system in which pharmaceutical companies benefit hugely from medical emergencies, where a military-industrial complex benefits from war, where energy companies benefit from energy crises, you are going to generate states of perpetual crisis where the interests of ordinary people separate from the interests of the elite. The pandemic created...
Okay, now you can agree or disagree, but his facts are accurate. We've done many shows on who controls the vast majority of members of Congress, and it's always the same people, and they fund both. So it's really irrelevant at one level, unless you become someone who has some integrity. And there are some Democrats and there are some Republicans who still have some integrity, but they're in the minority. But it's the American public seeing this. Every day there's some new scandal. Every day there's some new demand. that you must say certain pronouns or you should be punished. In fact, that's not a theory anymore. And Dylan in New York, I remember the piece I want to play. It was where there was a discussion of what's happening with this legislator trying to justify censorship in Ireland with this new law. And you got to hear what she has to say. You won't believe it until you hear it. And then you think, she can't get away with that. Oh, yeah, she can. And once again, you don't know what goes on in the back rooms of offices to convince someone who is otherwise reasonable to become completely unreasonable. They want a censorship against all speech that makes someone feel uncomfortable. Well, how about an awful lot of people will feel uncomfortable about just about any speech? Because you're going to put them in prison. You're going to fine them. Michigan, they're doing that, passing that legislation, or suffer passing, or it's passed right now. I'm going to get up on that later. California has some of that right now. Oregon, Washington State. Do you want to live in an environment where you have to monitor everything you say? Because that's where we're at. Just want to share that with you. But here's another clip. And again, I want these short clips. Again, call in and tell us what you think. This is the best commercial, all right? This is a commercial. Imagine that this is actually real in a lot of people's mindset about themselves. And I've hired some of these people in the past. I wouldn't today, because you want to give them a chance. But listen to what these young kids, they're 4 to 8 years old, have to say.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up, I want to be hired based on what I look like,
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder
just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
That is exactly how we beat the woke, by mocking them. And just for the record.
Okay, and we should challenge the woke. And just where are the adults standing up and saying, where did you get the right to say that we should never again use the word woman, father, mother, grandfather, brother, sister, man or male, that these are not real? There's no biological construct. Men and women are virtually equal, and a man can be a woman can be a man. Where did they get this idea that we're going to tolerate this? Instead of saying, no, we're not going to give you the pronouns you need to feel good about yourself, because you're taking away thousands of years of how people identify each other and the reality of biology. You want to change, that's your business. We're going to say, fine, enjoy yourself, have no problem with it. But when you compel speech, and that's what they're doing in Canada, and that's why Jordan Peterson lost his job after being a fellow at Harvard and then teaching University of Toronto, both very respected schools. But worldwide, a lot of people were paying attention to him, in the millions of people. They thought they would put him out of business. Nobody would want to hear someone who is, you know, stupid. Well, watch him in a debate and see how stupid he is. No, I'm against compelled speech. Let me say that again. This is not liberal Democrat. This is stupid. So if you're that stupid and you identify ideologically by something that's stupid, then that's on you. Because when you compel people with a punishment of prison and fines if they do not say the speech that you want, then you, as a tiny minority, are saying we're the ones who should be able to say that you're not a woman, you're a trans woman, or you're a cis woman, I should say. And so let's hear from the women who feel that there is a difference between men and women on many different levels. And that is not in these young people's mindset. And it's just growing like a virus, this whole idea that they don't have to think, they don't have to be critical thinkers, they don't have to intellect, they don't have to have any background in science. They just feel that whatever they want to say is right, and if you object, you're wrong. That's the world we live in today. That's unfortunate. Now, we found the clip. So for all of you who are Irish, as I am, and my mother's ancestry, we track back to the 1600s, came over here, became farmers in the Shenandoah Valley. They were the first farmers, poor, no one famous, no spectacular events, but they shepherded in peace and harmony because they also believed in Quakerism, nonviolence, and loving your neighbor. And they were masters of farming and fed a lot of people. Now we're told that if you say something that they don't like or can be construed in the broadest possible context, you're going to be hurt for the common good. Oh, where did we hear for the common good? Howard Stern and others, for the common good, get your vaccines. Okay, here we go again.
I just spent some time over in Scotland and England. And while I was there, somebody stood up in the Irish, a senator, and this is how she excuses restricting freedoms. Listen.
When you think about it, all law, all legislation is about the restriction of freedom. That's exactly what we're doing here, is we are restricting freedom, but we're doing it for the common good. You will see throughout our constitution, yes, you have rights, but they are restricted for the common good. Everything needs to be balanced. And if your views on other people's identities go to make their lives unsafe, insecure, and cause them such deep discomfort that they cannot live in peace, then I believe that it is our job as legislators to restrict those freedoms for the common good.
I just spent some time over in Scotland.
Okay, so she believes that you should punish people where someone else says, you made me feel uncomfortable. Now, how many people have you heard, young people in particular, on college campuses get up and they don't have a dialogue? They don't have a civil conversation, yell and scream, calling people homophobic and misogynist and racist. No matter what the topic, these are just the words. These are little, you know, weaponized grenades that they throw if they have nothing intelligent to say. So imagine what's going to happen over there when people say something or don't say something and someone feels offended and files an action, because this law is very broad-based. It's intended just to bring in everybody that is possible. I'd like your thoughts on that. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, while you're thinking about calling in, we're going to go to the last part of our documentary, The Cost of Denial. Now, why is this important? It's important because we chose, as a society, to learn no lesson whatsoever from the debacle that was AIDS. Was it real? Yes. Was the HIV virus real? Yes. Did it play a part in the AIDS diseases? I believe so, but only a part. Yet they didn't want it to be a part. They wanted it to be all of the symptoms, 30 different diseases, were due to the virus by itself, and that was debunked. And the treatment was safe. Everybody should take it, even if you don't have HIV, just so you don't get it. That was AZT. That was insane. 250,000 people lost their lives, according to the statistics I've read. And every good person, scientist, virologist, immunologist, medical doctor, who spoke out and said, hold on, you got this wrong over here. They were immediately denounced and ridiculed and canceled. Their careers canceled, their funding canceled. And yet the people who were doing the screaming the loudest, those who were the most aggressive and doctrinaire, they were getting money from Bros Welcome. Well, does that bias someone? You'd never know, because the American media never told the story honestly. It was just a promoter. Now, everything that happened with AIDS has happened with COVID. The people who found a cure were ridiculed and mocked, but they were right. Had we followed their advice on day one, think of the millions of people around the world that would be alive today. So wrongful death is on them, anywhere from 10 to 30 million people. And the same thing is true back then. We had a successful treatments, and we had cures. And we chose to denounce and denigrate the people who did the work and to praise the people who were the critics who were promoting a toxic therapy. This is the multi-award-winning documentary, and this is the final part of Manufacturing Madness.
NIH to knowingly ignore serious and credible documented reports of gross scientific misconduct coming from someone working on the inside of these trials, if that doesn't constitute scientific fraud, I don't know what does. All of this intentional blindness on the part of the NIH, the FDA, Burroughs Wellcome, etc., led to the unnecessary and unimaginable suffering of countless individuals, of both HIV-positive people and their loved ones, and the unnecessary deaths, in my view, of tens of thousands of people. Knowing what I know firsthand about AZT and knowing that it should never have received FDA approval under any circumstances, I was an eyewitness and later a whistleblower to gross negligence and fraud in the phase 3 clinical trials of AZT, 1987 to 1990. I've been saying to people for years that AZT was never proven to be safe or effective. From the particular studies in which I was involved, it would have been impossible to prove anything. The data was such a mess. I now realize that AZT is a deadly poison. All AIDS drug trials since that time have been based on the same flawed model. The big difference is that now there is even less meaningful oversight and even more of an economic incentive for physicians to enroll patients.
There were many patients who developed blood toxicities. There were many patients who experienced other symptoms of adverse reactions. Think of all the people who died from what we think was AIDS. Were those people, in fact, killed by AZT?
AZT, which was clearly killing people, and even the orthodox side has admitted in subsequent years that AZT killed a lot of people. The estimate I've heard is upward of 300,000, mostly gay men, killed by AZT alone. They called it monotherapy. The way they got out of that, they had all these phrases that they invented for themselves. One of them was lessons learned. So you would see all these medical papers and coming out, and it was lessons learned, now we've moved on. Monotherapy was the lesson learned. Oh, not one drug, several, a cocktail, that we're going to have several drugs, and the mistake was to have one drug. No, the mistake was to have one of the most toxic drugs ever put into a capsule and given to humans.
But it also acts in other ways. It acts in the mitochondria to lead to the oxidation of the mitochondrial DNA in ways which were not suspected. I'm thinking of the work of Miyazawa and Ozawa. It destroys mitochondrial function, and the mitochondria may be the secret to the degenerative diseases.
The 1,200 milligram dose of AZT originally handed out to patients like candy, and they were desperate to take it, in 88 and 89 and 90 resulted in countless unnecessary deaths. This is proven beyond a doubt by the largest and longest study ever conducted of the drug AZT amongst asymptomatic people, that is people who have HIV antibody but do not have symptoms yet. That was the Concord trial. And if you actually look up the Lancet publication of that trial, you find that the trial is divided into two groups of people. They're all healthy, they're all HIV positive. The one, the group that gets a placebo, a dummy drug that does nothing, and the other group which gets the real thing without telling people. Follow them for 3 years. When you looked at the people who went on the drug right away, in that group of people, there were 169 deaths. In the group of people that waited until symptoms developed to take the drug, there were a scattering of deaths, two or three. Now, I think that's pretty persuasive evidence that that drug is and was harmful.
If you tested antibody positive for it, you had it, and you were going to die. When you were going to die was an expanding concept, but in the beginning, they said it could be 6 months, it could be a year, which was fulfilled, by the way, by the AZT part of the story, because when people took AZT, they did indeed die in half a year or at most a year, especially at those early high doses.
I've shown that the original drug trials, the phase two studies, were blatantly fraudulent, proving nothing. And yet it was the basis for the approval of AZT, not only in the United States, but 30 other countries.
The original research for AZT said that it killed infected cells at a rate 1,000 times greater than healthy cells. But there are now four papers after that original one, which is also a Gallo-Bolognese paper, this one, that shows that, in fact, AZT is quite democratic. It kills all cells equally at the same rate. And in fact, that means it kills healthy cells at a rate 1,000 times greater than they said it did.
The question really is whether it should be considered criminal behavior on the part of people who have the public trust. You know, I mean, it is criminal behavior to set off a bomb in a federal building. Is it criminal behavior to start passing out poisons to people who have no real diagnosable diseases, to babies, for instance?
Glaxo welcomes inserts to the physicians and the physician's desk reference, warns the doctors not to confuse the toxic effects of AZT with AIDS itself. AZT causes numerous AIDS-defining diseases. For example, AZT causes dementia, which is AIDS-defining, destroys the bone marrow, requiring life-saving blood transfusions of people that use AZT. This information you get from GlaxoWelcome itself, the manufacturer.
Protease inhibitors have few good actions. They are antibiotic. So if the patient has an infection, it's going to work in the infection. They are antiparasite. If the patient has a parasite, it's going to be good for it. If the patient has a fungal disease is going to work also as an antimycotic. But besides that, the protease inhibitors are antioxidant. So at the beginning, or for a while, the protease inhibitors are going to do good. However, in the long run, when we give to a patient protease inhibitors, we are blocking the metabolism or proteins all over the body. So in the long run, the patient is going to die. And this is why nowadays the HIV/AIDS establishment is still repeating. There is no cure for AIDS, there is no cure for AIDS, there is not a single cure for AIDS.
Now, with the world facing COVID, I observe that many of the same people inside and outside government who mismanaged the AIDS epidemic are now repeating their mistakes during this crisis. The irony is that they are using the same strategies almost 30 years later. Control the narrative through the supplicant and obedient media, censor criticism of alternative opinions, and destroy the reputations of those who hold a different scientific view.
What is especially alarming about the corruption, politics, and profiteering during the war on AIDS and the cost of immense human suffering and loss of life is that Anthony Fauci was one of its leading architects. The conventional medical establishment and mainstream media simply served as his echo chamber.
And, well, it turns out we still have one more section. I'd like your opinions. We've got to say goodbye to WPI because they're going to break away to the news, and we'll continue at PRN.live. And I'd like your input, 888-874-4888. Also, we just got a new microphone in, state-of-the-art microphone today, so hopefully you're getting a little clearer sound. And also, coming Monday, Eutrice Lee will be in her new and expanded time slot at 5 o'clock. She'll be in Prime Drive. And she's the first of our hosts we put there because of her substantial audience and the nature of her show. Because we felt also when people get out of work and they're starting their evening schedule, food, at dinner or exercise, whatever they're doing, socializing, they'd like to hear from someone who is very empathetic, insightful, kind, and has been through, you know, a challenging life. It wasn't given to her. She had to earn it. And It's like having a wise woman show. So that's why we've selected Utrice to go through the week at 5 o'clock. Now, coming right behind me, starting Monday, will be Jimmy Dore. Then we'll have Ralph Nader, then Helle Colicott, and Celia Farber. We have a large lineup of really good shows that will be coming at 1 o'clock starting Monday. And it'll be a different show each Monday. And also, for those of you who believe you deserve a break and would like to rest, recover, repurpose, and just de-stress, coming in September, which is not far off, we're going to have that for you. So I hope that you feel that you deserve a break and make it your point to come. We have outstanding chefs. In fact, our chef, one of my older chefs, just asked, do we need extra room in the kitchen? Because he'd love to come down with his kids and do the chef thing, because he was an outstanding chef, just not in cooking, but in presentation. So we have the best chefs. And our other chef, who's been our chef the last 3 years, he's a chef in 4 different Michelin-rated restaurants. He's the chef. So you're getting outstanding and a nice energy. And he teaches classes in cooking, too, for those who would like to learn. And we'll be doing classes in growing mushrooms, fermentation, things you would need if you want to kind of get off the grid, even starting in the suburbs or metropolitan areas first and then expanding. We'll also be talking about the 1,500-plus different intentional communities in the United States, but also intentional communities around the world. And I do lecturing every day on themes that are important to understanding human nature and what it is to be a human being and how to wake up in the morning and feel good about yourself, even if you're not in ideal circumstances. Because if you wake up because you're not where you want to be, ideally, you're going to feel bad about it. That's going to turn your DNA off all day long from healing. And so what you think and how you think directly impacts your health. I'll be talking about that. So we have an awful lot to share. Luann will be doing counseling every day, and we'll have multiple workshops on meditation, yoga, tai chi, qigong, power walking, aerobics in the water, time in the butterfly hut, meditating, drumming. We have our drumming person coming back. That's really, it chills you out. It's phenomenal if you've never done a drumming circle. And so you name it, we're doing it. In one of the most beautiful bucolic settings, no pollution, nice people, small town. And by the way, I saw, you know, that they were going after this country western singer, because how dare you say that living in a small town, somehow, you know, you're not going to have the same crime and you can get away with anything you get away with in a big city in a small town. And he says, no, you won't. Well, he's right. He's right. You ought to see how nice people in a small town are. How good neighborly they are, how they look after one another, how when someone comes around the property and is outside the gates, suddenly we get a call, and then another call, you know, you have someone outside your gate, and didn't know that went down. It was some person that shouldn't have been there, some person with mental conditions, and we didn't know them, and they didn't know us. They just showed up. And your neighbors, you know, they're looking out for you. There's also a sense of family, community. It doesn't matter what your color is. It doesn't matter what your religious views are. These people are very, very patient in most areas. Now, there'll be areas where they're not. But to denigrate all small town as if somehow it's antithetical to what a real American is obscene. Well, now his music is number one. Ban a movie that goes after real child molestation, sex trafficking, that nobody wanted to talk about. Nobody would be interviewing this guy. Why? Why is it as of today we don't know a single thing from all the Epstein files, movies, journals, all of his logbooks that were kept in secret in vaults in all of his homes in Santa Fe, New Mexico, the Bahamas, West Palm Beach, and New York City? And he was known. He bragged about having famous people that he filmed having sex with minors. Why is it not a single thing has come out from the FBI? Who are they protecting? Who? And why are they protecting them? That's when I said we have multiple systems of justice. So when someone exposes how bad this sex trafficking is in the United States, and we've done about four programs on that, they condemn him, try to cancel him, and suddenly his movie in 1 week made $100 million on a $20 million budget. It's a blockbuster, and it's just going to keep growing. So go woke and go broke, and good. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for Utrecht Lead, and have a nice day.